Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining this week is New York State Assembly Minority Leader Brian Kolb, a Republican who represents New York's 31st District, which includes all of Ontario and parts of Seneca County. I guess, Brian Kolb, what I want to ask you about first is the Moreland Act Commission. The governor has set this commission up, and now we're reading some disturbing things in the press, in Daily News, other papers, the Times Union, in which it's being suggested that the governor is calling in the plays to the commission about who gets subpoenaed and not. What do you make of all of this?
Well, first and foremost, if those reports are true, it is very disturbing and, quite frankly, undermines the credibility of the Moreland Commission itself. And I think that they should do an absolute forthcoming, is it true, is it not true? And if it's not true, the Moreland Commission should say that, and then the Cuomo administration should say that, and then they should not be interfered with on what actions they think that they should take. Now, I've also heard from different sources, Alan, that there is some concern that the Moreland Commission is looking at things that the governor's office doesn't want them to look at. But, you know, you've already let the horse out of the barn. You know, it's to rein it back in. So I think, first and foremost, I hope that the governor or his surrogates are not wreaking havoc with the commission, because it would undermine the total credibility of anything that they're doing.
Well, look, you've got a lot of DAs on that commission. He appointed some very credible people. They're not going to take a fall for that. You know, there's that point at which we heard last week that they were thinking about disbanding the whole commission that he started, and that they were going to come up with some kind of constitutional amendment, which we all know won't pass, and go home. And then as we speak, they're talking about going for the whole thing and issuing subpoenas to everybody. So it really does look sort of chaotic to me.
What is chaotic, and what's also troubling, quite frankly, I'm not one of the persons that heard from the commission, so I think I can talk about this fairly objectively.
That's only because you don't make enough money.
Well, that's
on the
correct.
Outside.
Which may be a bad thing or a good thing, depending upon your perspective.
Well, at this moment, probably a good thing.
but certainly my whole point is that the Moreland Commission has a beginning and ending at some point in time anyways. And the ultimate changes that we have to make dealing with corruption in state government is doing things of a permanent nature. In other words, stripping pensions from elected officials if convicted, not allowing elected officials to use their campaign funds for criminal defense costs. You know, certainly having term limits for legislative leaders, if not even also for legislators. I think, again, these are some of the things that I've been advocating for that actually will have real change on the behavior of people in Albany. Term limits for committee chairs in both houses of the legislature so people do not get ingrained and also are not beholden to the legislative leaders, you know, as key committee assignments are doled out in terms of keeping someone in power.
Also, if I could just interject, I like your idea of term limits, but also there are lobbying groups which love the idea that they make a friend with one guy, he stays there forever, let's say the real estate, I'm just making this up now, the real estate industry, and then the, whatever the committee is that handles that, and then you've got a friend. So if you move them around, at least there's a little bit of that.
Well, of course. And not only, but I think it makes for better government because you get new ideas, new blood in that someone cannot get ingrained for 25 or 30 years in the legislature. And although I will say, you know, we have had a significant amount of turnover over the years that people don't realize because people focus on the reelection rate versus looking at the body that I've joined 13 years ago to today in the Assembly Republican Conference. I'm the sixth senior member, and there were 50-some-odd Assembly Republicans ahead of me when I started 13 years ago. So
yeah, but then that's because you're in the minority, and it's to your advantage to get out as soon as you can because, you know, you're treated like, I don't know, cow dung?
Well, let's just say this. People try to put us in the corner or try to dismiss the work that we do, and I feel very strongly, and I fire back at whether it's people across the state to try to diminish the work that the Assembly Republican Conference has done. We play a role, and quite frankly, Alan, nobody wants to admit the good work that we do because that would mean that we're an effective minority without being in charge. And I think we are very effective. It's just that nobody wants to give you a pat on the back or credit for it. All they want to do is criticize or diminish the type of work that we do. But we've even had turnover in the Assembly Democrats. There's been more turnover in the last 5 years than there had probably in the previous 10. So, again, I think the more we can get fresh blood in there, but in all avenues, leadership, committee chairs, I think would provide a much more positive, turbulent change in Albany.
Why not go all the way and just say, Brian Cole, just say, okay, let's have term limits for legislators?
I actually have come full circle on that. I used to say the term limits are decided by the voters. But first of all, you have to amend the state constitution to do it.
Yeah.
And the only thing I would say is my whole caveat with it, if we're going to have term limits for legislators, we got to make sure that they're staggered terms so that the bureaucrats don't
sure.
now run Albany,
sure.
which would be even worse than elected officials. At least elected officials are accountable to a voter versus some bureaucrat that's in a state agency that now has become the center of power because they're going to outlast the legislator. And But I'm certainly open to that. But term limits for legislative leaders is, I think, an absolute must. And I came up with that myself, even being a legislative leader.
Indeed, you are a legislative leader and a guy who comes on the Capital Connection and talks to us, which I really love. Hey, I can't help it. I'm sorry. And I apologize in advance. But there's chaos in Washington as we speak. And I'm afraid to tell you that some of it is among Republicans in the House of Representatives and John Boehner. And we see polls in which are holding Republicans accountable on all kinds of races, way down into the states and counties and the rest of it. What do you make of this?
Well, first and foremost, I think that there's enough blame to go around when the President of the United States says, well, I'm not going to compromise, I'm not going to meet or negotiate issues that are very troubling to the Congress that represent millions of people across the country. That's troubling. Now, I understand that the president has very strong feelings about what public policy he supports, but to totally dismiss the Congress when they represent millions of people across the country is problematic. And it's unheard of, I think, in recent history that the president of the United States says, I'm just not going to negotiate. On the flip side, with the congressional Republicans in the House, it hasn't been clear about what their strategy is on all of this. I mean, some people feel they should just let Obamacare go into play, not have all this theatrics about Obamacare funding, and let the country see for real what the Democrats unanimously passed in both houses with the president, and let the chips fall where they may. And the funding aspect wasn't going to be overturned because they don't have the votes in the Senate. So to go through that whole process as a sideline player doesn't make a lot of sense. But then again, you know, sometimes they have a lot more information in their, shall we say, decision-making that we may see back at home. But certainly I have not seen a clear strategy where they can come out of this and say, okay, we did this, this is what we wanted, and this is what was important to our constituents. And I think that there's a real disconnect even within the conference, the Republican conference in Washington, as to what they think they should do or shouldn't do.
So what about this? When we come down to the end play here, you're in a competitive political state, right? I mean, you know, Republicans can win. We've had Republican governors. We've had Democratic governors. We have a Republican congressman in this area, Chris Gibson, who wins. We've had a change in a district down below, Nan Hayworth, and who was defeated but who could come back and is talking about coming back. This kind of thing in a moderate political state does not help, does it?
No, I don't think it helps at all because, and of course, you have the media, quite frankly, Alan, that's not telling the full story in an equal forum that then the average voter can decide who's to blame or who they would prefer to side with. Because, you know, for instance, in the Senate, Harry Reid has been very difficult to work with, and for years, the Senate wouldn't pass a bill on anything. But nobody pays attention because it's sort of inside baseball, being a baseball fan, the insider's game. And so, you know, and of course, people, in one sense of the word, don't care. People have become very empathetic. They're now not showing up to the polls. You know, I was talking to a group the other day where they do some separate polling, and they are just shocked at the number of people that are registered to vote that aren't even voting, and that isn't counting the people that don't even bother to register to vote at all. So it's an erosion of public confidence. People feel that elected officials in general don't represent them. I think that's a real malaise that is not healthy. And we've got to try to do something to restore people's involvement in their governments, whether it's local, state, or federal. But right now, the antics and how it's portrayed is not healthy for anybody.
We're talking to Assembly Minority Leader Brian Kolb. Hey, Brian, we got so many things I want to get to. The governor appointed a tax commission, and he appointed his father's arch-political enemy, George Pataki, to it. And the idea is to reduce taxes. Is this going to be one of those documents that gets put on a shelf? Or do you really see any hope coming out of that?
Well, you know, first and foremost, I think the Cuomo administration doesn't do anything without, you know, having a political reason to do it. And so anything that they do is always weighed politically. Does this help the governor? Does this advance the governor's agenda in any way, shape, or form? And there's plenty of ideas out there to how to cut taxes, quite frankly. I don't think we need a commission. Now, do I have a problem with Governor Pataki? Of course not. Or Carl McCall? Of course not. But I think there are plenty of solutions, and even if they come up with some of the solutions that have already been proposed by the legislature, does that mean that the Cuomo administration is going to put this in their budget proposal? That remains to be seen. But I think, you know, the Cuomo administration is hell-bent on doing a lot of commissions, and even these task forces that we had, like the Medicaid redesign team, all of the tough recommendations that were made were totally ignored because they were tough political decisions to make. So these commissions are only as effective as the implementation of the recommendations, and that's where politics comes back into play. So my feeling right now, it has nothing to do with who is appointed. Is it going to be the same old, that only if it makes really good political sense for the governor to put it in his budget, will he do that? And then if not, it was just another, if you will, exercise in motion.
Just to be clear, I hate to beat the dead horse, but what you're saying here is that when things get tough and you want to make political points, appoint a commission.
Absolutely. And unless you have a proven track record that these commissions or task forces have actually done their work and implemented tough choices. You know, that's why, for instance, when municipalities were in financial distress and they appoint a financial control board, and all of a sudden, magically, the financial control board is the smartest people in the world. They come up with these recommendations to save money. No, the fact is a financial control board doesn't have to worry about getting any votes. They make the decisions, whether it's redoing contracts with police, firefighters, or municipal employees, but the elected officials don't want to deal with that because then they'll get blamed and then they think they won't be elected. And again, unless you're going to actually do something with the commission and they're actually implementing their tough choices, then I think it's just, again, just an exercise in motion.
The governor, to nobody's surprise, because it's where he needs to win in order to do very well in the next election, has an obvious upstate strategy. You know, he's in Buffalo a lot. He's upstate. He comes up with a whole bunch of things that he considers to be popular in the upstate region. What do you make of that?
Well, I think he needs to because his numbers are upside down, his popularity numbers are up or down in upstate. One of the biggest mistakes, I think he'll never admit this, but the biggest mistake he made was doing the SAFE Act. Now, regardless whether you believe that we should have stronger gun controls or not, that we can have stronger gun controls without having the SAFE Act in terms of other things that could be implemented that doesn't harm law-abiding gun owners. Huge mistake in upstate.
Thank well, people. Political mistake, but didn't he have some guts to do it?
No, I don't think so. I think he was trying to be a political opportunist at the time of that tragedy in Connecticut, and he wanted to be the first person out there to say, hey, we got something done. But the only way he was able to do it was to get the Senate Republicans and the Senate IDC to go along with him.
Those are the Democrats who left the Democratic Conference, the IDC, just to go over and be part of the Republican group.
Correct, and they did it through the message of necessity because they had to ram it through because they knew it would not stand up to public scrutiny, and then the phone lines would have rang off the hook. And that piece of legislation, Alan, quite frankly, from its implementation to its language, is the worst piece of legislation I've ever seen put in law in my time in Albany. And again, I know there are people out there that are concerned about illegal guns, and so am I. Let's deal with illegal guns, but don't put this on the backs of law-abiding gun owners. But getting back to the point, huge political mistake for upstate New York. And also, quite frankly, that would hurt him and would hurt him if he had any national aspirations, because you're not even getting further gun control passed in the Congress. Obama said he wants it. He can't get it done, even in a Democrat-controlled United States Senate. So the governor needs to be up here, but he needs to be up here doing the right things in terms of an economic recovery. And
so you don't think the upstate strategy is working?
Well, not yet. I think it's what he's trying to hope that it will. But he's not going to win back the law-abiding gun owner, that's for sure. I don't care what he does.
Let's go to casinos then. I'm sorry for rushing here, Brian, but I want to get to all of this stuff.
Sure.
So now part of the upstate strategy clearly was that you put casinos only in upstate New York because they need the economic development. The assembly strikes back a little, the Democrats do, and say, hey, we want them down here. Okay, but you have to wait a few years. Now we see a constitutional amendment being drafted, which some people consider to be disgraceful because it's basically electioneering in the amendment language itself.
Totally agree with that. I think this is a flawed strategy. If you look right now in upstate, we have two upstate casinos, in Turning Stone and also in Niagara Falls, both run by Native Americans. And if you look at the communities outside those casinos, do you see a booming economy? The answer is no. I think this is, again, a false premise. I don't think this is sound economic development. Now, somebody in the Catskills area may say, hey, a casino down there might make a good destination point. But these other casinos, I don't care if you put three in upstate, four in upstate, it is not going to drive the upstate economy, plain and simple. And I supported putting this on the ballot, not the language that they chose, but I supported putting it on the ballot because I want voters to have more to say as to what we do or don't do with statewide policy. And it would be inconsistent for me to say I'm going to cherry pick what's on the ballot, what's not on the ballot. But in this particular case, I don't support the casino expansion. I think we already have casinos. But even down in the city, Speaker Silver says, well, I'm all for casinos, but not my district. Well, how nice for you. You know, I don't think, again, that he should have that opportunity to stop something, especially if tourism is really driven in terms of numbers of people in New York City.
Yeah. You didn't address it from a moralistic point of view. I mean, do you think there's something immoral about doing this?
No, I don't think it's immoral. I know there's some people that think that it is. You know, I am not a casino person, but I got to tell you, I know a lot of seniors that enjoy going to casinos for a little weekend getaway or for an overnight stay, and, you know, it's not my point to judge, but certainly I just don't think it's an economic development tool.
How have the OTBs done?
Well, I think initially it was a great idea, but what would happen with the demise of the OTBs was the demise of the horse racing industry.
Uh-huh.
And I think, again, the racinos that have really, like, for instance, I have a racino in my district in Finger Lakes, has done very well. Pretty much kept the racetrack and 200 jobs alive by having video slots at the racino, and it's employing now several hundred people. They're going through an expansion. Again, I have no problem with that, but to say that four new casinos in our state are going to drive economic development opportunity, I much prefer that we work on research, technology, advanced manufacturing, tourism, real tourism, and not necessarily destination casinos, which I just don't think headcounts will drive in upstate New York.
And racino versus casino, don't they come pretty close?
They are close. The difference, Alan, is in table games. Racinos cannot have table games.
Right.
And, of course, you have table games at the Seneca Casino and the Turning Stone Casino.
We're talking about poker and stuff like that.
Right? That's correct.
Yeah, okay.
Blackjack.
Yeah. Talk to me about hydrofracking. We haven't heard much about it. The governor first said that his DEC, Environmental Conservation Group, was going to have to study it. Then he said the health department was going to have to study it. What's happening?
Well, right now it's clearly in the hands of the DEC, which is obviously part of the Cuomo administration, to either say we're going to have regulations for hydrofracking or not. I think it's been a big mistake that they've dragged this thing out. I think that there is no problem going with even a pilot program with a set of regulations to go, at least as a start, in the counties that really are looking for hydrofracking, and that's the southern tier counties right along the Pennsylvania border. The local governments want it, the local voters want it, and then let the DEC come in with a trial program just to get that industry started. And then, again, if other local communities don't want it, let local governments decide if they don't want, quote-unquote, hydrofracking in their particular community or if there's a watershed at risk. But to keep dragging this thing on, you know, Governor Cuomo took over 3 years ago, and we're still studying it to death. And I don't care what you do. You can always find experts, and we do this in the court of law every day. You're going to have an expert testify that something's really bad, and then the expert counter is going to say it's really good. And so who do you eventually believe? And I think that's why you have to have a decision made by the administration one way or the other and make it known.
Well, but even if the majority in an area, which I don't know about, but a majority in an area is for it, there are still people who say you can't poison my water and poison my kids. And isn't there something to that?
Well, of course there is, if it's based on scientific facts, not on emotion. And what I can tell you is a lot of people that I've been encountered that are negative on the hydrofracking are coming from an emotional state, not from a factual state. And if you look at, I mean, President Obama says we should have hydrofracking. And on the Gulf Coast, the governors along the Gulf Coast are saying, California is saying, of all places, that they believe we should have hydrofracking. So how can it be that New York State, which is, you know, now an island by itself on a lot of these things, is contrarian to what other states are doing that are not considered what I would call conservative Republican states? These are moderate or Democrat-leaning states as it is. So this does not become a DNR issue. It becomes an economic development issue and a research issue. And I think that's when you have to rise above it, because public criticism if you make decisions based on who's going to like you and who's not going to like you, you'll never make a decision.
Cecilia Kacik, the state senator, Democratic state senator, is calling on State Education Commissioner John King to uncancel his town hall-style meetings across the state to discuss Common Core standards. You may remember, of course, that he was for them. He decided he was going to do these open meetings. He didn't like the people who were showing up. What do you make of that?
Well, welcome to the world that we live in. You know, and the same argument was made with congressional representatives that were holding town hall meetings or didn't do town hall meetings because they didn't want to face the wrath of the constituents. I always believe you've got to go into the lion's den, and the only thing you try to do is implore people to be civil about the discourse. And I understand that some people aren't. And so you have to try to control that or moderate that, but to shut them down completely, I think, is worse because that only invigorates people to do more of that if they do happen again.
Isn't there something to be said to be fair? Isn't there something to be said that a small minority could show up at a group and drive somebody crazy? I'm sure you face that.
Oh, of course. Why do you think it is that when the president has all of his his forums that they select the audience that's there standing behind him?
Sure. It makes it, and then you say George Bush did it, this president does it.
Correct.
Now let's see who's next. I remember the days when they used to just call on people. I guess that doesn't happen anymore. Talk to me about Shelley Silver. I know this is a tough one for you because he controls the purse strings and all of that, but he's been under a lot of attack, in terms of his tenure. I think the second or the first longest speaker ever. I know you mentioned earlier that there should be term limits on how long a leader can stay, but should he go?
Well, it's not a tough question because what I've said consistently to the chagrin of some of the red meat crowd is I've said it's up to the Assembly Democrats to decide whether Shelley remains Speaker or not. It's up to Governor Cuomo. He's the chair of the Democratic Party and the Democratic Party leaders.
I don't think it's up to him.
Well, basically, I'm saying is from a political pressure because there's nothing, unless Speaker Silver gets charged with a crime,
yep,
there's no way to get him out of office unless the Assembly Democrats go to him and said, hey, we need someone else. It's too much of a distraction. And that's why I've said all along that when we held the vote for Speaker, I didn't vote for Shelley. None of my conference voted for Shelley. Only Assembly Democrats did. And what I keep saying is, why isn't the press holding them accountable? Because they're the ones that voted for him, and they're the ones that can convince him politically that it's time for new leadership.
Why would they do it? Because they were getting pressure from their own constituents?
Well, that or the press. And again, depending upon what part of the state you go in, you're going to get different reactions. In New York City, besides the press, the Daily News and New York Post, who give Shelley a hard time, all the women, the Assembly Democrat women, have been silent. And they're the ones that elected Shelley. So my point to the press is, ask them why they're silent, because they're the only ones that can remove him from office without
Committing
crime.
You're referencing, of course, the fact that there have been some sexual hijinks within the legislature, and there have been accusations that Shelley has not been forthcoming enough about disciplining some of his members.
Well, that's not only that, but people are just believe that too much of this has gone on for too long. Mm-hmm. So, but my point is, all right, who elected him? It's just like, it's any race.
Yeah.
And so my point is it's not up to another legislative leader, Republican or not. I mean, Shelley has even said publicly, I don't care what Republicans think. So he's not going to resign because Brian Kolb or any of our Assembly Republican people are calling for him to resign. It has to come from the people that elected him. And so I said, and this is, again, this is not my scandal. This is an Assembly Democrat scandal, and the Assembly Democrats own this and should be held accountable.
We're out of time, and I hate the fact that we're out of time because you've been terrific. Our guest has been New York State Assembly Minority Leader Brian Kolb. Again, Brian, thanks so much for joining us, and we hope you'll keep coming back.
Always a pleasure, and look forward to the next time.
Thank you.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org, and NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decision to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.